Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. Today we have a special broadcast for you as we will be holding a Black Talk Radio Town Hall on policing. So glad that you could join us all on this Sunday, July the 24th, 2016. So glad that you could join us. We are joined by the Black Talk Radio broadcast family, all of the different hosts of the various programs that you will find on the Black Talk Radio Network. All of them could not be here today, but we certainly did have a good turnout, and I just want to thank each and every one of the hosts on Black Talk Radio for everything that they do week in and week out in trying to bring information and news to our people, to our demographic that this radio station targets. So again, today we will be hosting a town hall style conversation. This conversation is aimed at discussing solutions to the problem of police brutality and extrajudicial killings in communities all across the United States. If anyone's been paying any attention to the news over the past several years, then you know there are just far, 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 far too many citizens being killed by cops. Not to say that in some of the cases the officers might have been justified, but in the videos, the reason that people are turning out into the streets, the reason people are in closed door meetings, the reason that people are making recommendations, the very reason that we are on air today is because it's not always justified. And in far too many of these videos we see, it's clear and evident it's not justified. We are under no illusion that anything discussed here today will solve the problem of police brutality and extrajudicial killings. We know that there are people in power who were elected or hired to do that job, and if they act like, you know, they don't know how to do it or they don't can't come up with solutions, then we are certainly going to offer our own as individual hosts, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. My name is Scotty Reed. I host Black Talk Radio News, which comes on every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday and Fridays at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. I'm just going to quickly go down the list of the hosts that we have participating here today, And if you are one of the hosts and you're late and you're just getting in because of whatever circumstances, then hit *6 and 1. We're going to ask that the listeners and the callers hold off before asking questions. Right now, we just want to identify the host. The listeners and callers, you will have an opportunity to contribute as well. We just want to get in the host that you hear on this network each and every day. So while I go ahead, bear with me as I go ahead and identify some of the hosts who have joined us. Area code 215, who do we have on the line? Give me just a second, it's not unmuting you. There we go, 215, who do we have? 215? Okay, perhaps that's not a host. I know this is a host because of the it says Code Breakers. So who do we have? Do we have D on the line? Okay. D, we cannot hear you.
Can you hear me now? Sorry.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We can hear you now. Don't worry about background noise because I will mute everyone until I come to you to speak so we can preserve the quality. I know that happens sometimes. 215, if you are a host, you are presently might have yourself muted, and that's why I can't hear you. I do think
Brother Reggie.
Hey, Brother Reggie, let me go ahead and Brother Reggie with Time for Awakening Radio. Give me a second as I label your name so I know who's who. And he, Brother Reggie, is with Time for Awakening Radio. All right, hang tight, Brother Reggie. Thank you. And Brother Paradox, do we have you on the line?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you, and your line is identified, so I don't need to do anything there. All right, so guys, hold on for a second as we're going to go down the list one by one.
Q&A queue is cleared.
And allow each host to give an opening greeting and tell the listeners when they can hear your particular program. We're not getting into the discussion at this point, but just want to give you an opportunity as host to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and when your program airs on the Black Talk Radio Network. So first we have Brother Dave, who is the primary host of Tando Radio Show. Thank you for joining us, sir. The floor is yours.
Hey, Brother Scotty and everyone else that's on the panel and all the listeners that are here. I just want to thank you all for providing this forum, and I think it's so important that we all come together to actually dictate our own sovereign direction and our self-determining energy. And this is a great opportunity for us to do that. I am David Wren. I am the host of Tando Radio Show here on Black Talk Radio Network Monday through Friday. We start at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we start at what time do we?
That's right. That's correct.
right. 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is when we start Monday through Friday. And our show, we started our show, we've been around for about almost a year and a half now, and our show is geared towards bringing preparedness to our people, because as always, our people are the last to know and are the first to be adversely affected by many of the global, geopolitical, national, regional events that are purposely designed to actually have a adverse effect on people, and our people actually bear the brunt of it all. So what we do at Tando Radio Show, I like to look at what's going on globally. I don't like to just look at what's going on in our immediate neighborhoods. Not that that's not important. It's very important. But I think, you know, we have to realize that the world is much bigger than the neighborhoods that we grew up in. And it's a microcosm of what's really going on globally. And when we start to look at these things, we can look and see that we are under an asymmetrical attack globally. And once we know that, then we can start to develop means and methods that will best serve us individually, our families, and our community. So what I like to do at Tando Radio Show, it's all about preparing for the different events that are unfolding that you're seeing now, which is no coincidence, and for things that are some of the unforeseen things that we can have our families, our ourselves and our community in a position of advantage. So that's what Tando Radio Show is all about, and it is an honor to be among the brothers and the sisters and the spirits of true love and energy that are resonating here, and it is definitely my pleasure.
Thank you, Brother Dave. All right, the next participant is Kenny Hendricks. He is one of the co-hosts of Change Matter Solutions. Thank you for joining us, sir. The floor is yours.
Yeah, can you hear me, Scotty?
Yes, if you could just talk up a little bit more.
Okay. Yeah, this. You have to excuse me. I am fighting a cold right now. I'm at the tail end of it, so my voice is a little bit hoarse.
Okay.
So I'm not going to speak too long. But, yes, this is Kenny Hendricks, and I co-host Change Matters. And we air on Tuesdays at 1 o'clock Central Time. And what we like to do is we like to talk about the events going on in our communities, and we like to focus on the solutions. We have a lot of us, we talk a lot about all the things that we, that the ills that affect our community and the things that really put us in a negative light out there. And what we like to do is talk about those things because they need to be talked about. And what we like to do on top of that is talk about solutions and get to the solutions of the problems. And I really want to thank Scotty for putting this town hall together, because I think these types of town halls will help us move toward finding the solutions to these problems. We have to talk amongst ourselves to find out what do we need to do, what are the types of things we need to put in place. When we move forward, how do we get the powers that be, if you will, to actually listen to what we're saying? How do we do that? How do we move forward? It's a struggle. It's been a struggle since we were brought over here on the ships, and it will continue to be a struggle. I'm not blind enough to think that we're going to solve this tomorrow or next week or even next year, but we've got to start taking steps to look at solutions and start moving forward one at a time, one solution at a time. And hopefully this town hall is just the first of many to come. And I appreciate everyone being in on this. Again, thank you very much, Scotty, for hosting and moderating this. And I'm looking forward to hearing all of the other input from all the other hosts. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, the next host is Black Rose of the Lotus Place. Thank you for joining us, ma'am. The floor is yours.
Peace and greetings, everyone. Thank you so much for putting this together. And we're the Lotus Place, and we air on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, and we basically deal with social issues. So I'm just happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to hearing what everyone has to say on policing this evening.
Thank you for joining us, Black Rose, and we're interested to hear your thoughts as well. The next Black Talk Radio host would be Colette Williams. She is the other co-host of Change Matters Solutions. Thank you for joining us, ma'am. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Scotty, and thank you to the rest of you for being here. And it's a pleasure for me to be a part of this town hall. I want to simply ditto, if you will, and echo the very same sentiment that Kenny Hendricks stated. It is about time for us to come up with our own solutions, our own change, and not be dictated by what others have to say about us, to us, and for us. And I'm a firm believer that if someone else tells you what to do, they create your destiny. And it's time for us to do this, to create the solutions for ourselves. Our show comes on Tuesday morning, which is 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 Central Time. And I look forward to the show because it gives us another opportunity to get our voices out there and to be heard. And as Ken said, we are not blind enough to think that we can do this in a day, a week, or even a year, but it's been a long time coming. And it's time for us to get up, get off of the pot, and say what we need for our communities and what we need for our families. And I'm not one that will sit back and let someone else dictate to us what should happen. I believe the change is incumbent upon the Black community, and we can't allow someone else to do it for us. We have to do it for ourselves. So without going any further than that, I'm anxious to get this going and to hear what all of the other hosts have to say. This is a grand opportunity. And I thank you very much, Scotty, for bringing this together. And thank you again for being a part of it for everyone. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, and thank you for the suggestion that led to this town hall. Next, we have Brother Anaje of Race Treaty Radio. Thank you for joining us, sir. The floor is yours.
Good afternoon, my brothers and my sisters. This is Onaji Mawid, co-host with Robin Benton of Race Treaty, which happens to come through the airways on Friday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And our focus is human rights, particularly looking at CERD, the Convention to Eliminate Racial Discrimination, and how can we use international conventions, covenants, and procedures to inform the world, as well as to use our power as a self-determining people to bring about human rights, the fullness of human rights protections and implementations here in the United States for people of African descent. This is what is called the International Decade for People of African Descent 2015 to 2024, and we want to use this time as best as we can to bring our, to applaud the three themes of recognition, justice, and development. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brother Onaje. Okay, next we have from Dark Matter Radio, Ronnie. Thank you for joining us, sir. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, each and every one of you. I am honored to be a part of this town hall meeting today. I have to say that I am in great appreciation to each and every one of the voices that I just heard and getting ready to hear. And I am extremely ecstatic to know that there is a radio network programming that is actually conforming, or not even conforming, but accentuating almost every aspect of what we need to be talking about in order for our community to be healed. At Dark Matter Radio, we come on Mondays at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and we are in the process of looking at, exploring, and giving out a great deal of history about who we are as human beings on this side of the continental earth. Exploring the theory that we are more indigenous than we are African, and with an understanding of what our true history is from the very beginning, starting around in the 1400s and then backdating that, we are able to find out exactly who and what we are spiritually. And then on that spiritual plane, we'll be able to begin to start understanding what we need to do to begin this long-term healing that needs to be done within our community, and bring us to a situation at a point of self-determination. My main philosophy in life, because I have worked in the child welfare system in New York City for over 10 years, I've also, as a protective investigator, also have done foster care for quite a number of years, worked in daycare licensing, and then run housing authorities and fair share of investigational situations. And it with all the social, psychological damage that has been done to our community, it has come quite apparent, as in any abuse situation, and I do look at this as an extreme abuse situation, that the person or people that have been abused cannot begin to heal themselves while they're living in the same house as the abuser. So when we begin to start talking about how we're going to correct the situation that we're in, we need to understand that we are a people that have been psychologically, physically damaged, and it would take almost 2 to 3 generations in order for that to heal. And in order to do that, we're going to have our own right to self-determination of being able to teach ourselves, educate ourselves, and educate ourselves to the people who we truly are and meant to be on this planet. And again, I have to say that it is an honor that I'm here today with all of you respected talk show hosts and community leaders. I thank you deeply again.
Thank you, Ronnie. Thank you. Okay. We have quite a few people on the line, quite a few hosts. So let me just say right now, if we need to go over 2 hours, we certainly will go over 2 hours. I will just break the podcast up into 2 different podcasts. But I'm just so happy that so many of you found it worth your time to participate in this town hall. Next, we have Sister Cece of Blacks in Business Radio. Thank you for joining us, ma'am. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Scotty. I want to say thank you for holding this town hall meeting, of course, and putting this platform together that we call Black Talk Radio. Because of Black Talk Radio, I myself and many others have had the opportunity to voice a wonderful solutions to our problems and come together to do so. And I just thank you for doing this for our community. First of all, hi to everybody, the ones that I know and the ones that I don't know. I appreciate you coming on and looking forward to working with you in the future. I am Cece Harry, and I host BIB Radio with Robert 11X Minor. That stands for Blacks in Business Radio. As you all know, most of the world's greatest contributions came from a black man or a black woman. And right now is the best time to show the world that our standards are raised because we expect more out of ourselves. We are an entrepreneurial show for black people, introducing those to entrepreneurship that may need the information, and then to support those who are already entrepreneurs. As you know, our dollars is what is making this world go round. And if we decide to know that and do something about that, we can change our problems economically. Of course, that's going into what we're here for today. But if you invite your friends and even yourself to listen to our programming, I think together we can help build more businesses in our communities to where we can hire our own, for those that don't want to be entrepreneurs, but hire our own, and therefore just create the black dollar in a way that this world has never seen before. So I'm looking forward to working with you all again, and looking forward to the town hall meeting, and looking forward to more of us becoming entrepreneurs and making our communities what they need to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Cece. All right. Let me see. Next, I believe we have Elliot, one of the hosts of Time for Awakening Radio. Thank you for joining us, sir. The floor is yours.
Brother Scotty, how are you, sir? It's, good afternoon to the other hosts. My name is Brother Elliot Booker, host of Time for an Awakening. On we stream live at 7 o'clock on Sunday evening. We've been doing the program, myself and Brother Reggie, for about 8 years, 2.5 on the Black Talk Media Project, and the other time on the terrestrial radio in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania here. Talk about everything from history to current events. And just happy to be part of this forum.
Thank you, Brother Elliot. Thank you. And let me see. The next host, I believe, is kind of hard to read this. But I believe this is one of the hosts of Code Breakers. Is that correct?
That is correct. This is Paradox.
Hey, Paradox. Thank you for joining us, sir. The floor is yours.
My name is Paradox, and I co-host a show called The Code Breakers with my partner, D. And we discuss, we believe, the major problem on this planet, which is racism, white supremacy. We really discuss the context, history, politics, about how white people manage the planet, basically. Our focus is around education, economics, entertainment, labor law, war, sex, and religion. Ultimately, we want to end racism and replace it with justice. That's our main focus.
All right. Thank you for that, Brother Paradox. And the next person in line, now, I'm not sure if this is a host of the program because the board's getting a little crowded. And so, but let me check. 281, you should have heard your line unmute. Are you one of the hosts of on Black Talk Radio?
Yes, good afternoon. Yes, this is Aja.
Hey, Sister Aja. Good to hear from you, everyone. Sister Aja is one of the co-hosts of The Lotus Place. Thank you for joining us, ma'am. The floor is yours.
Oh, I am so, so very honored to be a part of this forum. I'm not a regular show host like the earlier guests. I just do a segment on The Lotus Place show that that comes on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Central Time, and I am just really so proud to be a part of this townhouse. And thank you, Scotty, for hosting this. The young lady whose idea it was to put it together. We are moving so rapidly, and I'm so glad that so many of us are ready to make these moves. Part of what we do on the Lotus Place, as Black Rose mentioned, is history and local events and worldly events. And I do a segment called Mind, Body, and Spirit, because if we're not together on the inside, if we're not aware of what's going on inside of us, what makes us tick, the energies, and that we, as the other host mentioned earlier, that we have healing that needs to be done and how to heal, then we have little chance of fighting the forces on the outside. So that is very important, as well as putting together our steps of action, being prepared mentally, physically, and spiritually inside. And it's so good that we are being proactive instead of being historically reactive. So again, I am so honored. And Black Rose told me that Scotty was putting this together, so I just decided I wanted to be a part of it, and I just jumped in. So thank you so much again.
Thank you, Aja. Okay, the next caller, you should hear your line unmuted. I'm unable to read the board in terms of who it is, but please, is this one of the hosts of a Black Talk Radio program? Okay, I will move on. I do believe this is Brother Reggie, one of the co-hosts and producers of Time for Awakening Radio. Thank you for joining us, sir. The floor is yours.
Yeah, peace, Brother Scotty, and to all the other hosts. I'm glad to be on and looking to hear the other voices for the other hosts and see what we can do as a solution to our Black family. Time for an awakening.
Thank you, Brother Reggie. And I do believe we have, this is Brother D from Cold Breakers. Is that correct? Brother D, is that your line that I unmuted? Okay. Let me move on. I'm not sure who that was. Let me see. Area code 267, is this one of the hosts of Black Talk Radio programs?
Hey, good afternoon, Scotty, and good afternoon to everybody else. This is Brother Ralph. Sometime I co-host with Brother Reggie and Brother Elliot on Time for Awakening, 7 o'clock on Sunday nights. And I just wanted to participate because I am a proud contributor to the Black Talk Media Network. I appreciate what you're doing, Scotty. The more and more I listen to terrestrial radio and what's being fed to the masses, this platform that you have put forth is so desperately needed. And how I try to contribute when I co-host with Brother Elliot and Brother Reggie is to make things so simple that a person with limited understanding can understand, because I see one of the dilemmas that we're in is that we're in a lot of denial and we've been fed a whole bunch of programming. And I know to unprogram a person, it takes a lot. So I go by my experiences of being unprogrammed myself to just spoon-feed the listening audience a little bit at a time, so it won't offend them. So I just appreciate what you're doing today, Scotty, and everybody else, and I just wanted to say hi to everyone.
Thank you, Brother Ralph, for joining us today and for your contributions to the Black Talk Media Project and Time for an Awakening. Let me go back, because I believe we missed Brother D. So listen, let me just try him one more time. Want to allow him to give an opening statement. Sometimes these boards are kind of hard to read. Brother D, if you would hit *61 so I can identify you, if you're able. Okay, so this is what I'm going to do as we move on to do the first question. All right, I'm going to unmute everyone. So if I haven't called on you to speak, please watch your background noise if you are able to mute yourself. Please also consider the time constraints as we try to tackle these two questions. We may have to do a part two. Let's not think again that, you know, we're going to get everything out on the table on just this one program. All right, so the first question is, what can the U.S. government and state governments do to reduce police brutality and extrajudicial killings by cops against citizens? I will just go ahead and give my opening statement on that and my solution. I feel that if the United States government, the state governments, the municipalities, whoever these elected officials and appointed officials are, if they had the will to address this problem, the problem would be addressed. And while it probably wouldn't be totally eliminated, I don't think that's possible. I think it would be greatly reduced. I just do not see with my own two eyes that any official, regardless of who they are, has taken this very, very serious. When I see that the FBI in 2006 issued a secret report which has been declassified, I'm imagining it without, you know, at least to the White House. Bush was in office at the time. I'm imagining it went out to Congress. But in this report that the FBI did, it was titled White Supremacist Infiltration in Law Enforcement. And the report came out in 2006, but the FBI first started commenting on it in 2004. All right, so 2 years they, you know, did whatever they did to come out with this report 2 years later. And when it came out, I heard about it in the mainstream media, but I have never heard about it since, except for on the Black Talk Radio Network, where we have been discussing that report and how that is being left out of the equation. Now, considering that the federal government says that there is a problem with racist police officers in these departments, I think there needs to be a federal task force on that end. I think that police departments should do more to screen people and weed them out. I served in the United States military. I certainly knew who the other soldiers were that were racist. Okay, and so I think that police could certainly do more to screen these people out. And then as individual officers, we do see from time to time individual officers stepping forward and telling us what's going on behind the thin blue line and what have you. But I don't think that these officers get the support that they deserve from anyone. They're not going to get it from the police unions, but I don't think these officers get the support from the public. And perhaps that's why more of them are not speaking out and standing up, is because when an officer does stand up and speak out, they're often left on an island alone. And being the news junkie that I am, I do know officers are stepping up and speaking out, but it's just not enough of them. And I imagine so many of them live in fear. live in fear. I have to consider that as well. And as I get ready to conclude my statements, the prosecutors, and when there are clear cases of a police officer extrajudicially killing someone, and it's just plain as day that there it's not justifiable, then I think people should not have to take to the streets to force a prosecutor to do their job. Okay. Even though when prosecutors do stand up, as we see going on with Marilyn Mosby in Baltimore, who attempted to prosecute the six officers that her office said were involved in the killing of Freddie Gray. Now we see how she is being treated when she stepped up to do the right thing. We've seen other prosecutors. We've talked about them on New Abolitionist Radio, which I'm a co-host of. I'm sorry some of the other guys who host that program aren't with us. But then finally, and I'll say this last, as juror members, when these prosecutors bring a case, and I'm not talking about a weak case, but I'm talking about a strong case. And I'm talking about strong cases, especially when we've seen video evidence, we've had officers testify, you know, that killing wasn't justifiable. And then as jury members, we do not vote to convict these people. So I've just described the entire system, the things that I see that's wrong in the system, but I don't see how I can force, you know, them to do their jobs. You know, that's going to have, as an individual, I can't do it, but collectively, I believe that we can force them to do their jobs. And I just think there is a lack of will, a lack of courage for these people to do their jobs. So I will end my comments there on the question of what can the U.S. government and state governments do to reduce police brutality and extrajudicial killings by cops against citizens. I have other thoughts, but again, time constraints, I will move on to the next person. Okay, next up is David Wren of Tando Radio Show. Sir, you have 5 minutes to go ahead and offer your solution to that question.
Okay, great, Scotty. I'm not going to take the whole 5 minutes because there's many people that need to speak, and we are all in this collectively together. The collective prudence is the important thing. Now, the question would be, what can the U.S. government and state government do to reduce police brutality and extrajudicial killings by cops against citizens? Well, I just, as a disclaimer, I just want to say I'm a former police officer in Los Angeles, in the city of Los Angeles, of over 20 years, actually from 15 or so active, and then as a reserve. And the reason why I left is because my moral convictions would not allow me to continue to do what we had to endure from the systematic approach that is happening. And I actually knew and could see what we're seeing now was in the works, from the procedures and the policies that were coming from not only the departments, but above and beyond the departments. It was coming from the usual suspects. And if you look at this from an investigative mindset, I always like to look at things in an investigation from means, motive, opportunity, and who gains from it all. And if you do it that way, then the government and the state government itself is the culprit of this all. And one of the things, and I fully understand and agree with the question, but see, I know how these sociopaths and these psychopaths will think when they would hear this type of question. As soon as we get to the point where you ask, how can we reduce police brutality? This is what these sociopaths and these psychopaths think. We will reduce it by your extinction. We will reduce this by continuing these processes, because we're just going to give you lip service. We're just going to do a dog and pony show, and we're just going to do what's politically correct and is morally always, which is always morally wrong, to appease you and to pacify you and to placate what really needs to be done. And this is what the upper echelon, and this is what the overall fundamental thinking and direction and objectives are of these organizations. It's not every single officer that's there, but those that hire them based off the social, the psychological profile of who this individual is. And they know exactly what they're getting, and they know exactly what the outcome will be 5, 10, 15, 20 years, 30 years down the line. We don't. And so I think that for us to really have any meaningful movement in this whole thing is just like you have organized crime. You have organized crime from the individual level. Then you, in my opinion, you have what I consider constructed malfeasance. This is constructive malfeasance would be on your governmental level. Then you have tabulated wickedness that would be on your corporate level. And all of this culminates into a fundamental macro evil that we all have to deal with globally. And this leads to an arranged domestic violence that we see here in the United States that turns into national duress, that turns into a global savagery. This is an agenda. This is a conspiracy agenda that we're really dealing with. And because of that, it's just like the human body having being exposed to a toxin or to a poison. And once that body is saturated with that toxin or that poison, the only thing that one can do is to detox, remove, and cleanse the body, the family, and the community from this deliberate and calculated and asymmetrical approach to depopulation. And I think it's critical, in my opinion, it's not only within our community, but we're at a critical juncture now where it really requires us to have a self-preserving abolition from this government. There is no time for, in my opinion, there is no room for negotiation. And we don't even need to develop or waste our energy developing an ultimatum for them. We have to take back our self-determining existence and decide to remove our energy from this system, because you can never negotiate with the devil without losing your soul. And I'm not speaking of any, this is, in my opinion, this is much bigger than race, much, much bigger than race. But they use race as a tool and a tool and a target in order to reach the overall global agenda. And that is to subjugate the world and to maintain where they continue to develop, where we petition them for our freedom. When your freedom is already given to you at birth, it is upon you to not to be a soldier of their orders, but to be a warrior of your freedom. And so I really think that in order for this to stop, in order for us to reduce, we have to look at the real cusp of the foundation of this institutionalized subjugation, and that is the government itself, and that is the state governments, all forms and fashions of the government. In my opinion, there needs to be a self-preserving abolition from that, and to remove ourselves collectively from that. We have the means, the capability to establish the society and the cooperation and the collective prudence that we want to live by. And until we do that, and we've been schooled by their institutions of schooling, I call them schools of obedience, to actually uphold the system that controls us all. And that only gives the perception, it's a facade, it's a perception of enslavement. But when you surrender your energy to it, that you are indeed enslaved. So I think that we need not to petition them at all, because we are petitioning ourselves among the sociopaths and psychopaths. If we are not willing to kill for them, if we're not willing to destroy others and enslave others, there is nothing that they would want to negotiate that is sincere. So there is no honor among the evil doings of evil ones. So I think it's critical, and I think everyone here understands the full dynamics of this and the ramifications of it all. It is clear that what we've been doing in the past has never worked, because we've always followed the agenda of their petitions. You have to get a petition to demonstrate. You have to get a permit to we follow all of their rules that ensures their ruling. We need to no longer do that. We need to look at each other as who we truly are, the creators of the heavens or the hell in which we will live in. And I am fully committed to creating a heaven, as well as all of the brothers and the sisters that are here, and all of the brothers and sisters that are everywhere globally, because this is something that has been going on for millions of years, and it will continue if we allow it. It's nothing new. It's just new to us, and this has to be broken among us all. And I truly believe that all of us have asked to be here at this time, at this very moment in eternity, to have an effective approach against what has been subjugating the world for so long. Much love, much respect to you all. That would be my response, Scotty, and to all the panelists.
Thank you, Brother Dave. Let me just say this. I know each and every one of the hosts, so I know where each and every one of you come from, your perspective, because, you know, as the manager of the network, so I'm exposed to you all more than others. And so we are not going to, like, retort or anything like that. I just want people to give their solution or their perspective from their perspective. But I would encourage, if we want to have further dialogue among ourselves, that we listen to each other's programs and call in and participate, okay? Because it's not just you and the host having a conversation, but there are possibly thousands of people who will be exposed to that dialogue and possibly learn something. So our purpose here today is just to hear from our host and their solutions and thoughts on this very serious problem. Thank you, Brother Dave. Again, Dave is with Tando Radio Show. Next, we want to go to Ken of Change Matters Solutions. Again, thank you, sir. The floor is yours. You'll hear a little bit of music for the rest of the callers. You'll hear a little bit of music when the 5 minutes is coming to a conclusion, so you can wrap it up. But thank you all again. Ken, the floor is yours. Ken, you might be muted. Kenny, are you there? Okay, it appears that...
Scotty, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now, sir.
Okay, sorry, I had a problem getting the mute button off. thank you, Scotty, and thank you, Brother Najee. Very enlightening what you had to say there.
That was Brother David of Tando.
Oh, there's Brother David, I'm sorry. I'm going to keep mine short again. I'm fighting a cold, so I'm hoarse again. One of the things I want to talk about is the fact that we see in the media, and we see from the local police and the state police, that there is an absolute denial that there is a problem. You know, we look at the Tamir Rice case, and there was obvious breach of protocol. I've heard officers say that the way that those officers handled that was not within protocol, because they drove right up to that young boy and fired within 2 seconds. They should have held back to try to figure out what was going on. There's a lot of things going on out there that that is being denied, and somehow we have to get past that denial. I don't know exactly what that's going to take, but what we need to do is address the fact that. And I think part of it might be to address these police agencies and say, listen, even if you don't believe there's a problem, you have to deal with the perception that there's a problem. You know, because a person's perception is their reality. Now, we all know that there is a problem. There's no doubt about that. But again, there's this constant denial from the police, from many right-wingers, politicians, pundits. If you listen to Fox News, if you listen to the Donald Trumps, the Rudy Giuliani's, every one of them thinks there's no problem, that the problem is us. Okay, but what they won't deal with the fact that is we're in the streets, we're protesting, we're saying Black Lives Matter, and they come back and say White Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter. all these things need to be dealt with somehow to get people to understand, okay, even if you don't think that there's an issue, that there is a perception of an issue, and you have to deal with that. Otherwise, you're going to continue to see things, and I'm not condoning it, no way, shape, or form condoning what happened in Dallas and Baton Rouge with the shooting of the police. But I'm saying you can only push people so far, and people will react. And you have, I believe both of those brothers were veterans, maybe coming back with PTSD, had some serious issues. And they're seeing these things go on. And it's similar to some of the things that happened to the guys coming back from Vietnam, where they went over and fought for the country and came back and continued to see the problems. You start feeling like, you know, what was all that about? You know, you're mad at the country. You're mad about what's going on. You see what's happening to our people. So these things will continue to happen. And, you know, and it's unfortunate that it gets like that, but someone is going to have to get to these people and say, you have to deal with it. They have to deal with it. Otherwise, we are sitting on a power cake, and things could get a lot worse. And I'm going to go ahead and yield the rest of my time to the next host.
Thank you, Ken. Again, Kenny Hendricks, one of the hosts of Change Matters Solution. We want to go now to Black Rose, the host of The Lotus Place. The floor is yours, ma'am.
Thank you, Scotty. And also I want to say to you, I'm glad that you mentioned the FBI report regarding the neo-Nazis infiltrating the police department, because that just seems to not receive the notice to as it should. For instance, in the town hall with Obama, that was not mentioned. And it just seems as if we should really push that as the black media. And it should have been addressed, in my opinion, because we know that this is happening. These neo-Nazis have infiltrated the police department. This has been reported. They're also going into the military for the training, and then they're coming back out on the streets with all of this militarized equipment that President Obama continues to say that these cops should have. They should have the increased resources for patrolling our neighborhoods. And so I just totally don't agree with that, and I don't have any faith that there's anything that could be done that we could ask of the government that could help us other than allowing us to exist separately. And even if we did achieve that, if you look back at what happened during Black Wall Street, when we did live separately and practice nepotism and we helped each other, we had our own community and we thrived and lived very well, then we were bombed and we were killed and chased out of our own community. So I just don't know really what we could ask of the government. It would be ideal if we could ask, if President Obama would have written an executive order to increase funding for education, to defund police in our communities and allow us to take care of our own communities versus him saying that the police could use more resources. So that's my statement. I'm so glad that the brother mentioned Tamir Rice, because these vulgar killings of our young people like Tamir Rice and Michael Brown and Trayvon Martin, our children can't even walk home from the store without being killed. You can't even drive without being killed. You can't even breathe without being killed. And so I would say remove the police completely from our neighborhoods. That's my request. And let us work from there. Since this crime is manufactured, the war on drugs was a war on black and brown families. And so these cops that originate from slave patrols are continuing based on this whole fake 13th Amendment, which so-called abolished slavery, except for incarcerated persons. And so the police are patrolling our neighborhoods like slave patrols. And it's just it's insidious, because we're constantly being shuffled into prisons if you're not killed on the street. So those are my thoughts, and I look forward to hearing what others have to say.
Thank you, Black Rose. Just in case you might have missed it, I did watch that town hall with President Obama. And while this black police chief, I want to say he was out of the state of Missouri, but a black police chief, he might have been in the audience. And while he did not mention that FBI, that 2006 FBI report, white supremacist infiltration in law enforcement, he did make the historical connection. He said that the Ku Klux Klan has always been a part of law enforcement, and they continue to be. I was happy that he brought that up, but the report was not brought up. But again, that was a police chief who acknowledged that. The next person, the next Black Talk Radio host, we have Sister Colette of Change Matters Solution. Go ahead, the floor is yours, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Colette Williams. Thank you very much, Scotty. I want to again say that I do echo all of the sentiments by each one of the hosts that have already spoken. One of the things that I think that we really need to embrace is we need to stop asking the government what we should do. There again, we're asking permission to think, asking permission for what we need to do in our own community. We need to do this. The work is ours. We have to take a position and take a stand and say to our own brothers and sisters and families and friends in the street and friends wherever they are, the time has come for everyone to stop the nonsense. We have to take responsibility for the things that happen in our community. As long as they or we leave it up to them, who is the government, things are always going to be the same. That's one of the reasons we have come up with this Change Matters. It's time for an awakening. It is past time for an awakening. As long as we ask them, what should we do, we will get what we've always gotten. And we see what that is. We see that. We ask for solutions. Chief Brown here in Dallas told people on the protest line, come and get hired here. Complete an application. Get hired here. Work in your community. The response from Black Lives Matter was, that ain't working. No, that's not it. Well, if that isn't it, and just like the question that we're presented with today, what can the government do? That right there was the government saying, come on in. Do what you need to do in your community. And the reply was no, that's not going to work. How could that not work? And I'm not suggesting that we position ourselves to become subjected to what they want us to do, in other words. But what I am suggesting is that that was a call that we should have said, okay. Because we're not going to get in the street and fight and change things. We have too much division in our community for that. We've got to do it with intellect. We've got to do it on an economic level. We've got to do it with us standing up our rights, saying we know what needs to happen. We know where we're going. That's not where we want to go. So asking the government what they can do or what we should do, I don't think asking them is the answer. And that's the way I feel. I don't think we need to ask them anything. I think we need to handle this. I think this is something that we need to take control of. My other suggestion before, during one of our shows, was go back to community policing where we have ride-along, which I've done myself. I did it as a kid. We have ride-along. There was a commission meeting in Pasadena, California. Not a black person was there. Not one. It was in the midst of all of the shootings. Not one was there. And there were pictures all over the newspaper that the panel were there, the black politicians and commissioners were there, but the people from the community did not show up. They did not show up. I have other friends who are part of other radio stations in Los Angeles. And when I called to find out what was going on in L.A., they said, oh, there's a lot going on. I haven't heard one thing. I've not heard one thing. I was watching a video that came over the Internet a couple of days ago, and it was about a woman who was stopped by the police in Austin. This man picked her up. This had to be a 285-pound police officer. He picked her up and threw her on the ground, her legs and her entire body. He lifted her up in the air and threw her on her back. It's a wonder the woman was not broken in every piece of her body. All of her bones should have been broken, and they were not. That happened in July of 2015, and it didn't come out until just now. And the officer said he was trying to control her. He threw her on the ground twice. The dash cam showed all of it. He said, well, she swung at me. The dash cam never showed that she swung at him. But he got away with it. And if we don't say something about it, he's going to continue to get away with it. He will get away with it. I'm not suggesting that we take to the streets and burn anything. I'm suggesting that we go to the city hall. I'm suggesting that every time there is a meeting, we are there. I'm suggesting that we take control of this with our intellect. We all know black folks are highly educated, very intellectual. We have done a lot for this country on our back, our blood, sweat, and tears. It is time for us to intellectualize all of this, and we determine what has to happen, not the federal government, because if they create our destiny, we ain't going nowhere. It's going to be genocide, just as it is today. Thank you very much for the floor.
Thank you. Thank you, Colette. And the next person will be Brother Najee Muweed, who hosts Race Treaty. Thank you for hanging in there patiently, sir. The floor is yours. Brother Najee? Brother Najee, we hearing music. Okay, Brother Najee, not sure what we're hearing there, but I know that wasn't you, brother, so are you there? Let me check you one more time before we move on to the next caller, Brother Najee.
It's knowing your...
Okay, Brother Najee is busy. Let's keep it moving. Next up is Ronnie of Dark Matter Radio.
Good afternoon. And I appreciate all of the comments that are being said this day. And we have come to a situation as to where we need to know who and what we are as a people and as a human species, because this situation that we're confronted with today hasn't just started in the 1960s. George Washington said way back before he even became the president of the United States, that he viewed these people, the indigenous people of the Americas, you and I, to be extinct in the not-too-distant future. And that not-too-distant future was in his lifetime. He said, we'll either be extinct, assimilated, or completely wiped out in terms of being amalgamated into other races. And in order for us to begin to start trying to figure out what we are going to do, we need to understand what our history is. Mm-hmm. Because as Malcolm X says, a person who has a lost history is truly a lost soul indeed. Mm-hmm. And when Martin Luther King came down and he said that, you know, even after 100 years, we still find ourselves languishing in the far corners of our own land. And one of the things that I believe is that the United States government, in all of its entirety, can't do anything for us. We are involved in a system that was designed to wipe us out from the very beginning, and that's what their intentions are. And their intentions was to create something other than what we were, to take us from the land that we were that we had inherited or we were given to by a creator that they don't believe in. And I believe with a brother David that this is more than just a situation that is involving race. It's more than race. This is a global spiritual situation that is found upon all of us, and this is the reason why here in this time, this day, right now, we find ourselves living in this type of society with very few people who have the will to do what needs to be done in order for us to free ourselves of this persecution that has been going on since the 1400s. Over 100 million people had died dealing in this war, this prolonged war that has been going on. And what you see today are the continuing of the remnants of all of those other people that have gotten brutally mutilated, slaughtered, killed, and raped in this land. I'm not only talking about here in America, I'm talking about from all the way from Alaska all the way down to Peru and all of the islands as well. So when we begin to start breaking down this problem, one of the problems that we have is that we have lost our true identity and we don't know who we are. So when we begin to start praying, we're praying to things that do not have our best interest in heart. And I'm not defaming any of the religious components that all of our people are in dealing with. But as you know, there are many different components in terms of where our religion came from and how it was given to us. So one of the first things that we need to do is begin to start educating our people in terms of who and what they are, making sure that they understand that this is not a racial situation. They're not killing you because of the term that they gave you as black. They're not killing you because the term that they gave you is Negro. They're not killing you because the term that they gave you as an African American and the reason why they created the African American to begin with. And the very name associated with the term African American means conquered people. When you begin to start breaking down the word in linear fashion, we won't get into that today. But I implore all of you to begin to start looking at the various terms upon which you call yourself. Because when you begin to start using the terms upon which they give you, you begin to start cursing yourselves and influencing the cursing of those words upon the people that you're trying to resurrect. So if you damn yourself from the wording upon which they gave you, you are damned from the very beginning and you're damned to the very end. So my purpose is to make sure that we get out there the true education of our people of who we are, what we are, where we came from, and what we are meant on this side of the earth and what we are meant to the world and why they truly wanted to try to wipe us out. And so when it comes down, what can the government do to us? The only thing that the government can do for us is to let us go. Because the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment did not satisfy us being free people. In fact, it turned that involuntary servitude into voluntary servitude, creating slaves out of each and every one of the people, including all of those that they considered free men before those amendments came into place. So we need to really, really take a deep look in the dark matter of our own souls and come up an understanding that we need to really bring this forth, whether we like it or not, whatever the truth is, and it's the truth. And begin to look at it for what it is, because they created a society that did not exist before they came here in the 1400s. So now the society that they created, and get this, we're a society that produces nothing, and we're also a society that we control and gain the industry. So my suggestion is that we begin to start taking ourselves out of the system upon which is enslaving us. Thank you very much, and I appreciate you deeply.
Thank you. Thank you. And again, that was Ronnie of Dark Matter Radio. Let me just interject here before we move on to our next speaker. We got a lot of speakers, so we are not going to take any breaks except to tell you, you are listening to Black Talk Radio. It is New Black Media for the New Millennium. You can find us at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Okay, just so we can stay focused, again, the question right now, and we will have a part two to the question, but the question right now is, what can the U.S. government and state governments do to reduce police brutality and extrajudicial killings by cops against citizens? And I, you know, don't have any point of disagreement with what has been said. But the second question, we will get into what we can do to reduce police brutality and extrajudicial killings. But keep in mind, I think each and every one of us, myself included, are paying taxes to this government to do what it is doing to us, and that has to be addressed. So let me move on to the next caller, the next host, excuse me, and I believe that is, I'm not sure, but I think it's Brother Paradox. Brother Paradox, do I have you on the line, or is that Brother Elliot? I think that's Brother Elliot. Brother Elliot, a Time for Awakening Radio. The floor is yours, sir.
Scotty?
Yes, sir.
You can hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, to, well, just dealing with the initial question that you asked, what can the U.S. government or state governments do to reduce police brutality. I kind of agree with what a lot of you have been saying. I don't think it's much that this government is going to do to reduce police violence or police brutality. We know that these police forces were set up to do basically what they're doing. I think it, by us knowing our history here and our experiences, it should dictate our movements and what we should do moving forward. If you look back at just going through the 20th century, after the Red Summer of, I think it was 1917, after the release of that movie Birth of the Nation, when you had a rash of lynchings all through this country, north and south, the police departments was heavily involved in it, along with supposedly common citizens. And our people started screaming for anti-lynching laws. Those laws came into effect, but it didn't stop what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
In 1955, when our people screamed bloody murder after the murder of Emmett Till and other people, George Lee and others that had been murdered all down in the South, the state of Mississippi set up that Mississippi Sovereignty Commission and used former FBI people, retired people, to come down there. And basically, they used white supremacists and everything that was involved in that sovereignty commission. And the murders, the lynchings didn't stop. So, you know, we just can't keep repeating history and not knowing who we're dealing with. This man is a different type of individual. He's different than any people that the Almighty has ever created. His mentality is different. We have to deal with him differently. And I'm not saying that the protests in the streets and all, I think all of that plays a part in it. We have to do what we have to do among ourselves, and I think that kind of spills into the next question, and I'll hold some of that opinion for the when that question is asked. But I do know unequivocally that what happened in Dallas and what happened in Baton Rouge is going to continue to happen, and I'm not going to disassociate myself from the actions of any of those men, because Nat Turner did it, Gabriel Prosser did it, then Mark Vesey did it. And if you read about any of those men, they weren't mentally deranged or they weren't impaired. They were just sick and tired. And some of our people, when they reach the limit, when they're sick and tired, they do things that some of our people might consider extreme. So those things are going to happen. If people don't have the stomach for it or can't deal with it, they're going to have to hide their eyes or do something, turn off the television, because those things are going to continue to happen. It's all a part of what's got to happen in order for things to change. And believe me, the people that are instrumental in these systems is going to change. So, I mean, we just got to prepare ourselves. If people don't have the stomach for certain things, then work on other fronts. But we all have to work. We all have to either join organizations, get involved in something. If you're not in the streets, do whatever you can, because people are going to be involved in changing these systems one way or the other, whether we agree with their approaches or not. I'm done, Scotty.
All right. Thank you, Brother Elliot. Yeah, I want to just underline something Brother Elliot said, is that, you know, many people in our community have different approaches to the problem, and I think that we should show a unified front, even if we don't agree with whatever their approach is. Okay, long as it is an approach that isn't directly undermining other people's efforts to address this problem in our community, that we should support them. We should not tear them down in any kind of way. Because, again, we all come from different places, different experiences, and, you know, at least, you know, people are taking action instead of sitting back. So, again, I agree with everything that has been stated. There is no wrong answer. There is no wrong answer. The next person I want to come to is Sister Aja of the Lotus Place. The floor is yours, ma'am.
Good afternoon. I am going to yield my time to one of the other hosts. I just really kind of want to say, to voice the first question, I'm totally in agreement with your first speaker. I think his name was Brother David, and the last speaker. They know what's going on. They are quite aware of the sick system is twisted. And I really believe they have no intentions whatsoever in changing it. And no, we do not need to beg. We do not need to plead. And we certainly are not their children. So I'm in agreement with the other host, most of them, about I don't want to ask anymore. We're done asking. So those are my thoughts on the first question. Just want to give my time to some of the other hosts, and I'm respectfully appreciate all the comments.
Thank you, sister. Thank you, Sister Aja. That was Sister Aja of the Lotus Place. Let me see if we can go back and get Brother Anaje. See if he's ready now. Brother Anaje, you there?
Yes, Scotty, I'm here.
Yes, Brother Anaje is the host of Race Treaty. To our first question, what can the U.S. government and state governments do to reduce police brutality and extrajudicial killings by cops against citizens? Again, we will have also give an opportunity to answer the second question when we go back around the table. But the first question is, what can the U.S. government and state governments do to reduce police brutality and extrajudicial killings by cops against citizens? The floor is yours, Brother Anaje.
Okay, thank you, Scotty. Interesting enough, the sister spoke just before me, and there was a brother that spoke before her whose name I didn't really catch.
That was Brother Elliot of Time for Awakening Radio.
Okay, and he mentioned a number of past heroes. He mentioned Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, and he might have mentioned someone else, but actually what I was doing was playing for you some information, broadcast from the Brother Long, who was the so-called identified shooter in Baton Rouge. That was actually his words. And what he was saying, and just because you heard the music, you thought it was something different, or it wasn't intended to be played. What he was saying in his last broadcast was that there are two principles. One principle is the principle of knowing your rights, and the second principle is standing on your rights, which in fact he distinguishes as two different things. And if you heard, if anyone would have heard his particular broadcast, or at least that one, one would have to come away with, I don't think he's deranged. And that's the same thing that brother had mentioned, that he was saying. So he was, in international terms, that's called just order tour. that the, that people have to stand up for their rights for them to be actually observed. You can have rights. So the Constitution, and someone else said the Constitution didn't give us our rights. God gave us our rights, but we must stand on our rights. And that's where we are as a people, and that's what they have always done psychologically through terror, to make sure we stay inside a very prescribed space of thinking about who we are and what is ours. So when Malcolm said it's not a question of civil rights, it's a question of human rights, he was correct. It was Yousef Clyde, who was the chairperson of the OAAU in Canada, that took him up on that, acquired a PhD, and founded the International Human Rights Association of American Minorities, that has been in consultation with United Nations since the 1990s. So it is a question about human rights. Imari Obadeli asked the question, when did we consent? We never consented to this. So we are living under oppression because we have never consented to this. So all democracy starts with informed consent. So we need to be informed about what human rights are, about what the conventions are, and how to stand on those conventions. So our program, Race Treaty, brings that information forward. And for as far as police killings, yes, it's now making sure that our people know that the working group of experts on African people have just put out a statement condemning these extrajudicial police killings. We need to know now, as never before, we are seeing international support of our people in our position against this tyranny that's happening to us. But we have to be the ones to bring it to them. The very same way that South Africa fell, it wasn't the United Nations sanctions that made them fail. It was the people who decided to disinvest in South Africa that brought about the crushing of that regime. And of course, they're having problems now, but the question, they moved it forward. It's about us divesting in all these different entities that's holding us back.
I have a quick question, Brother Anaje, and you might be the person to ask. In terms of the two brothers who people, and I would agree with those people who look at these brothers as martyrs, doesn't international law say something about the right of oppressed people to resist by any means necessary? I know I'm paraphrasing there. Are you aware, though, of that international declaration?
Well, it's of course that statement was made popular by Malcolm X. I don't know if there's anything that's similar to that, but all United Nations conventions talks about the right of self-determination, and that's the right to protect yourself, and that's the right to development. We've never been given the right to develop, so we have to use these conventions to state our case. But the problem that we're having right now is the consequence of oppression is that we're not united in what we want.
Understood.
So the problem is twofold, the situation which we live in and the lack of response on our part to, in fact, affirm our own right to self-determination.
Thank you, Brother Anaje. Okay, the next speaker is one of the co-hosts and producers of Time for Awakening Radio. That's Brother Reggie. The floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, Brother Scotty and family. I'm going to try to answer... address both questions because I'm going to be off shortly.
Right.
What I want to say, I think it's twofold when you're dealing with it. When you were speaking about the taxes we pay in this country, I'm a believer in utilizing different strategies. I'm not big on voting, but I do agree in voting strategically to get what we want. I do believe the system is broken, and we need to have people on all platforms working to get us out of this mess. There's a sister, Gerald Sanders. She has some legislation. It's called the Yulia Law, and it deals with police officers having to get insurance, almost like doctors have to get malpractice insurance. So if they shoot, kill someone, and it's unjust, they have to pay out of their own pocket. So I'm looking at that as a as one strategy within the system. Outside of the system, I heard Brother David. I think when we talk about freedom, we have a lot of freedoms, but I think the conversation that we need to start having is defining sovereignty, what it is, what it looks like, and we need to start having that amongst ourselves. We don't need to ask the government about sovereignty. We need to define what that is for ourselves and how to mobilize it, and what's the best way and what we want to do. I just think that conversation is a conversation that you're never going to have from any politician, black or white or any other color. And I think that's the conversation that we need to start having, sovereignty, because if we want sovereignty, that means we have to be responsible for ourselves in all facets. And I think until we start having that conversation and looking at that critically and being serious, then all we are is just basically talking. And that's just my opinion, but I appreciate everything I've heard so far. Mm-hmm. And time for the wake, and I appreciate all the brothers and sisters on the line.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Reggie. And again, I do know you and Brother Elliot have to leave to produce Time for Awakening Radio, which means actually I'm supposed to leave too, since I got to simulcast that program on Black Talk Radio. So I'm going to go through quickly again. I will just say, if you have a solution, if you answer either question, it's your choice. Can the government, do we expect the government to do anything? If not, then you can give what you think the people should do. And as long as time allows, I'll go back to the other people who did not have an opportunity to give a solution. So the next person who is a host on our network, I believe it would be, let me see, 561. Who do we have on the line? Okay, 561 may not be a host. The next one, Brother Ralph. Brother Ralph, thank you. Again, Brother Ralph is with Time for Awakening Radio. Brother Ralph, the floor is yours.
Yes, sir, Brother Scotty. I agree with just about what everybody has said. But my main thing, Brother Scotty, is the government and the state is doing exactly what they're designed to do, and that's oppression, and to put us in a police state. So going to them is just like going to your enemy and asking them for a way out. And I'm going to keep it just that short, but that's the way I see it. They're doing it. So we have to come up with some solutions on our own to police our own communities and do what's in the best interest of us. And don't ask them for anything, because they're only there to oppress us. And I'm just going to leave it at that, Brother Scotty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. I certainly wouldn't disagree with you. Again, this is not to dispute anything anyone is saying, but I believe the system working exactly like it was designed to work. I don't think it's broken at all. Area code 469, I'm not sure if this is a Black Talk Radio host. If it is, please state your name.
Okay, I'm not a host. I was on the show last week. This is Renee.
And, okay. Well, Renee, I would ask that that you hold. I will open up the line for listeners right now. We want to go through and hear from the Black Talk Radio hosts who were invited to participate in the panel. But thank you for tuning in. We will definitely try to get comments from the listeners before we wrap up. The next person, you should have heard your line unmuted. It's hard for me to read who that is. Can you please state your name?
Yeah, this is D from Code Breakers.
Hey, Brother D of Code Breakers, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Reed, and I'm sorry that I disconnected earlier and I wasn't able to introduce myself. So
please take the opportunity to do so now, sir, and answer the questions.
Okay, just real quick, we do a program called the Codebreakers, and basically we're just trying to diagnose everything from an analytical standpoint, more so than just trying to get back into the system, plug back in, and try to work with solutions that we know that haven't been solving this problem of racism, white supremacy. And I'm not going to be too long because I know that there's a lot of people online waiting to speak, but one of the things that I would like to share is that I think one of our major roadblocks is that we're not able to work together while still being having different views. And I think that a lot of times everybody can go into their own little corner and kind of, you know, divulge in their ideology, so to speak, and we would still be able to be oppressed and dominated by the group that classifies themselves as white as a whole, because they don't have a disagreement about how to dominate us. So with that being said, is there any solutions? What can the U.S. government and state governments do to reduce police brutality and extrajudicial killings by cops against citizens? I just have suggestions. I don't have the overall answers to this particular problem. Don't think that it will be solved. But one of the things I think that police departments should be willing to do, because we have a lot of people that are of color that do police in these areas, in so-called inner city or areas where there are, you know, particular people of color, specifically black people reside. One of the things I think they should, you know, the U.S. government should pass is basically work in 5% of the respective population. You should at least have most of the police departments no going outside of that particular range, which means that the police department should mirror the community. If you have a 85% African-American community, then you shouldn't have a police force that's majority white. That's just incorrect. It doesn't make logical sense to do it. I mean, we can go down all kinds of numbers, and Ferguson was a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. You know, people basically policing and you know, getting benefits off black poverty. That these communities should be policed by us. If we're majority of that community, then put pressure on, you know, that local jurisdiction to represent that police force. If you believe in going to the government for any kind of resolution or immediate resolution, not saying that this is going to solve the problem.
Yes, sir.
But it definitely would help relieve some of the tension, especially the tension between white police officers and black citizens in these communities. So that's one of the things that I wanted to state. And another thing I think that would be helpful is that all peace officers, should stay within 5 to 10 miles of their own community. If you live 5 to 10 miles outside of that community, then you shouldn't be a police officer there. Bottom line, you know, you don't know nothing about this community. Why drive an hour and a half away? You stand way off somewhere else. You're dealing with people that you care nothing about. You don't see them at the grocery store. You only deal with them in criminal situations. It's just incorrect. So those are some of the things that, you know, within the system that I would suggest that we can put pressure on our local jurisdictions to do. But I know that may be some pushback on that. But just if you're going to go against the particular system, that is one of the suggestions that I suggest. And I know that's probably been suggested before, but I think that's something that you can really lean on to kind of see the pushback, to kind of tell the difference between people trying to solve the problem and people not trying to solve the problem with racism and white supremacy. Now, are you my time?
I'm not sure if you gave a suggestion, and I appreciate, you know, you sticking to the first question, but because of time, I'm going to open it up also to the second question. But do you have any suggestions on how we ourselves can prevent these killings and brutality against us?
Well, I'm just going to speak for me. I subscribe to the philosophy of Mr. Fuller, Don't agree with everything that he has to say, but I do agree with this particular perspective that he holds. When he suggests that if you get pulled over by a police officer or somebody that is prospective, that could be possibly a race soldier, then the thing that we should be telling our children or anybody else that come in contact with police is to comply. Now, this doesn't guarantee that you're going to be not shot on the spot.
Right.
You know, that is not a guarantee that you would not be killed
right.
at moment's notice. But just to know and to understand where you're at and to understand that this is a dangerous situation. You're behind, like you always say, Mr. Reed, you're behind enemy lines. And that if we come to an understanding of that, no matter what your belief system is, you got to understand that whether this police officer is so-called a black person, if they've been basically indoctrinated into the dogma of white supremacist views, hence David Clark, people being very, very anti-black against their own, makes it very, very difficult to push back on, you know, police command. So I would just suggest that all victims of racism, people that's classified as black or forced into the classification of black, would say comply when you get stopped by police officers. That's one of the things that I think that will help reduce killings, even though that's not a guarantee. Not saying that is right or wrong to be mistreated, but the most important thing is to not have tragedy happen over and over and over again, and to have these racists justify our murders for our children to see. I mean, we have children basically watching lynchings, and they're noticing that we're not able to do anything about it.
Wow.
I mean, just think about the damage that's taking hold on our children or the ones that's younger than us. I yield my time.
All right. Thank you. Along the lines, you mentioned Mr. Neely Fuller. He has a suggestion for black people who don't get along with each other to minimize conflict by minimizing contact. I would apply that to the police in our communities. To minimize this conflict, we must minimize the contact that we have with police. Okay. Let's go on to the next person. Let me see. I'm not sure if this is a host. If you're not a host, I'm going to ask that you hold your comments. Area code 214, is this a Black Talk Radio host? Okay, that's not. Thank you. Sister CC of BIB Radio, thank you for being so patient. The floor is yours.
Okay. Hello, everybody, again. Well, you know, I'm actually comfortable. What are we doing, both questions or just...
Yeah, both questions for the sake of time.
Okay. I'm comfortable saying that as a whole, I don't know. I don't know what the government can do for us, because if they haven't done anything all this time, including, you know, everybody thought that this black president that we have was going to be some kind of great hope for things to change. I don't know what they can do for us. That would take me into our next question, I guess, is what can we do for ourselves? Well, I like what Ronnie was saying. You know, we don't know who we are. I think that would be the beginning of our solution, knowing who we are, because we have so many different belief systems and all kind of different things going on that cause division where we are. And like the other brother was saying, you know, we need to just come together as one, even if we do have these different belief systems, because they see us as one. You know, they see us as one type of people, and therefore they're killing us. So and then somebody was talking about Miss Gerald and Yulia. Her solution, I don't know if you all have heard of the Yulia bill. It's a piece of legislation that was written by Onus Inc., which is out of St. Louis, Missouri, headed by Miss Gerald Sanders. You can go to her video on YouTube. Just type in Yulia,
is spelled U-R-L-E-I-A, and you can watch the video talking about the 12-point system, not minimizing police brutality, but stopping police brutality completely. And it totally makes them accountable for the killings that have been going on. That system has a huge tracking that they do daily. I mean, I know Ms. Gerald, I work with her personally at least once or twice a week. I'm talking to her about the different situations. But they're working tirelessly, recording all of the things going on, just doing different speaking engagements and going to Washington, D.C., and trying to get the legislation passed. So I would urge you all to go and look that up if you haven't already. But what we need to do for ourselves is heal. I mean, that's the best word I can say. But when you look at the different levels that we're at, not saying that anybody is higher than anyone else, it's just kind of hard to put your finger on one certain thing. It's not like there's something that we could just write out, here's the recipe, and boom, everything is going to be changed for us. Because we've been scattered for so many centuries and decades or whatever, I just think it's very hard to say, okay, here is the formula. I mean, maybe somebody has it. I don't know. I haven't heard it yet. But I know that this station is one place for us to come together and have these conversations. And maybe we can put these solutions together so that we can eliminate the police officers. I don't think that they are needed. Something is needed, but they aren't needed simply because of what they came from, where they started out as. I don't know how we can respect a slave catcher, respect murderers, when that's what they've been all this time. They've been murderers. So how do we turn the other cheek and say, oh, okay, now we like you? I mean, I don't care what kind of spin they put on it. These people have murdered us. They're murdering us daily. So I believe that they need to be completely eradicated, and we need to have, you know, like the other brother was saying, people from our community. I don't even want to use the word policing, but people from our community doing the checks and balance system on what's going on. But I mean, I don't, as a whole, I don't have the answer. I just have some thoughts. I'm happy to hear what everybody else has to say, and I'm going to say that's all I have to say right now.
All right, thank you. And there's nothing wrong with saying I don't have the answer and I don't know, you know, because, you know, a lot of times people will claim they have an answer or a solution and they just feeding you, you know, babble and whatnot. I think it is perfectly okay for us to admit if we don't know something, because that is on the path to knowing, is first acknowledging that you don't know. So nothing wrong with saying I don't know. Let me see. I know we, Brother Paradox, I don't see you on the line. If you're still there, I want to give you your opportunity to speak. Hit star 6-1 if you are still there, Brother Paradox, because I'm not seeing you on the line. Okay, let me see. He might had to leave us. If he did, I apologize. But we have, you know, a lot of participation today, and I appreciate everybody being patient. All right, this is what I want to try at this time. I want to just unmute everybody, okay? I want to unmute everybody and just watch your background noise, and let's try to not over-talk each other and speak one at a time. I think everyone has been given an opportunity to speak. Let me take everybody off of mute.
Q&A session is over. All callers are unmuted.
Okay. Brother Paradox, if you dare and you have not spoken, or if you are a host on Black Talk Radio Network and you have not spoken, please take the opportunity to speak now. Okay, so I think everybody has spoken. Let's go back to the top, because the first people that we, first host we spoke to did not have an opportunity to present a solution. Although, Brother Dave, I think you did give us a solution, but do you want to do a part two? Go ahead.
You know what, Scotty? I want to say this. I want to answer the question because I guess I didn't. I thought I did. The only thing that the government and the state can do to reduce this is to admit guilt and to surrender themselves to the authority of the people. That's the only thing meaningful that they can do. So now, for the community, what is it that we can do within the citizenry and the communities that we've won? I think probably one of the most important things is that we have to first, the people that are going to maintain the security and the peace within our community have to be hired by the community solely. No longer can you allow the police department to hire the agents that they will have to serve the overall purpose for them, because that individual has been hired because they fit the mold and the bill and the psychological profile that the agenda wants. And so until we have an agenda, and until we hire people to maintain that agenda, and hopefully that agenda is based in the collective prudence of peace, prosperity, love, and equality, then the people have to do it. So in other words, no longer can we allow the police department to hire those that will actually be providing police services. You can't let them hire them. The only people that should be hiring the people that are working in your community is the community itself. And I think that was expressed by a couple of people here very elegantly, and it was articulated to the point where we really have to grasp that and make that one of the criteria. And another thing, in order to do that, another solution is that we have to get a restraining order. What I like to do is know the laws so that you can use it against them from just from this one standpoint, because I do not believe in actually using the system at all. I don't believe in voting. Because what matters if you vote, if you're not counting the vote? I think this is the thing. When we get when you get a restraining order against the police departments, you get a restraining order against the court system. Yes, it may not go through, you may not get the response that you want, but the whole world is waiting on its ancestral parents to act as parents. And that would be us. The world is really waiting for us to lead to prosperity, and it's incumbent upon us to take on that. And I think that's one of the things. Get a restraining order against the police department coming into your neighborhood. It's you know, as long as they continue to hire those individuals, you are going to get exactly what you're getting now. The best person to work your community is the one that you know. That is the essence of community policing. If you know this individual, and you've known this individual since they were a child in grade school, elementary school, and throughout high school, and they went on to further their education, you have an idea what you're getting with that person. That's who should be actually hired by the community. Next, and probably one of the most difficult and most important ones, is that in order for the community to reduce what's happening in the police brutality and the killings, it's a part of a bigger purpose here. We have to be willing to lose it all.
Absolutely.
And until we're willing to lose it all, until we're willing to lose jobs, until we're willing to lose income, until we're willing to lose standing, until we're willing to lose so-called written freedoms or allowances. What I say is that they're just giving you an allowance to do something. Until we're actually willing to put skin into the game where we are going to lose from this, then it's, in my opinion, we're going to only recreate another problem that is going to continue the overall objective. And the thing that we should be willing to lose is that we have to come to the point where we say we are willing to lose it all for self-determination and sovereignty. Now, no longer do you have a reason for a government. And if you look at the word government, it means to rule. No longer do you need a ruler. I would much rather work in collective prudence with people than to have a leader. Because that leader is going to put a leash on you and tell you when to sit and when to go. So that is what I think the community can do, and I think it's very important that we actually start to move in that direction. I just want to say I am fully behind every sister and brother that's here in their cause, in their fight for what is in our best interest collectively. Much love, much respect.
Thank you, Brother Dave. Brother Elliot, I know that you have Time for Awakening Radio coming on at 7 o'clock. You're probably already preparing for that. Did you have something to add before you transition to Time for Awakening, sir? Okay, Brother Elliot may have already left us to prepare for Time for Awakening Radio, which is coming up on this network at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. I didn't give a solution, so if y'all will allow me, I agree with the solutions that have been expressed here. I think, if I'm hearing correctly, that the consensus is that we don't need them. We don't want them in our communities, and we don't need them. I heard one cop say, a former cop, I think his name is Norm Stamper. It may have been a different cop, but I heard that police should be like firemen, that they should stay at the station until there's a fire or until there's a crime. Because from my observations, I don't see how police are preventing crime. I just see them responding to crime. Will there be, individual incidents from time to time where a police officer does something extraordinary and actually saves somebody's life or prevents a crime? I'm sure that may happen. But on the whole, on the average, they do not stop crime. They only respond to crime. So they shouldn't even be patrolling the communities, because again, this is the way I look at policing. This is nothing against individual police officers, because I do believe there are some who join for the right reason and want to actually be a help and not a hindrance to the community. So I'm speaking on policing in general. I look at police primary duties as doing two things: slave catching and tax collecting. I look at fines, and things of that nature, jaywalking, double parked, all of those type of things fines for nonviolent so-called infractions. I look at those as extra taxes that they're collecting. And I think that the Ferguson report that the Department of Justice put out just simply bolsters of that view, is that they are tax collectors, that they are looking to generate revenue for the city and state. And if that is their purpose, we don't need slave catchers in our community, and we don't need extra tax collectors in our community. And we do need to start, and I wouldn't even call it policing, I would say we need to come up with our own conflict resolution people in our community. Okay, that instead of you calling the police, you calling the brothers to come in and solve this conflict in your household or between neighbors. We have to get back to being a community, because right now, I think it could be said that we are not acting like a community. A community acts collectively, and we've been acting like a bunch of individuals. Anybody else have anything they'd like to add?
I just wanted to add one thing, if you don't mind. I just wanted to add one thing, and the solutions that everyone is coming up with, in my opinion, the solutions that everyone's coming up with are perfectly good solutions if you are within a system that is going to support you and keeping those solutions going. The problem that we are facing right now is that we are in a situation as to where we are in a system that does not want you to be free. And in order for us to be able to have us to be able to engage in our own communities the way that we want to, we have to be separated from the system that is oppressing you. And this is one of the reasons why, I'm just going to put it right out there, that I do support a UN resolution to the world, which there is a working document that is being promulgated right now, that should be put out there in order for us to be able to have those legal restraints for the United States government not to be able to go into our communities that we are going to be controlling, that they're going to be killing us. So my situation is that as long as we are within a system that controls us, in a system that educates us, in a system that promises all kinds of things and has consistently from its inception denied us of our legal rights of being human. So I use the word indigenous because for the most part, when we begin to start learning our history, we'll find out that most of us are indigenous or part indigenous, and it carries a large weight to the UN and as legal consequences in terms of being able to explain exactly what needs to happen to our people. So that's one of the things I just want to just really put out there.
Thank
is
you.
That these solutions that we're coming up with are great, but as soon as they don't like what's happening,
right,
they're going to call on Black Wall Street to stop it all.
Right.
This is Onaje.
Brother Onaje, give me just a moment, because we got Brother Paradox, and he has not had an opportunity to speak at all. Brother Paradox, are you there? Brother Paradox of Code Breakers, did you have something you wanted to share, sir? Okay. Okay. Go ahead, Brother Onaje. Brother Paradox, as soon as you get your situation worked out, just speak up, sir. Go ahead, Brother Onaje.
Thank you. All of this, what we have, this conversation fits inside of one particular item. That item is called a plebiscite, where people have the right to determine who they are, as well as determine their relationships, their political relationships, whoever they want to have a relationship with. We have to raise our consciousness and demand a plebiscite in international law that says this is who we are and this is what we want to be. So we can speak inside of civil rights. Civil rights will never solve the problem, because civil rights created the problem. And we talked about 13th or 14th and the 15th Amendments already. So we have to be a people to demand a plebiscite and let the world support us in that right of self-determination, of self-direction, and then we'll be able to map out what we have to do. And I'm saying the three things that the International Decade for African People put forth: recognition, justice, and development. If we focus on just those three things, we'll find our answers.
Thank you, Brother Onaje. And I specifically know that on race treaty and the people that Brother Onaje works with, they do really focus on this from a human rights standpoint. They're very well versed in international law, and that is something I strongly suggest that we all look into, is these plebiscites, because as even Ronnie stated, you know, they forced us into this. You know, they never gave us a voice or a vote to say we want to be quote unquote citizens of the United States. We were never given that opportunity. We were forced into this corporation, and it seems like the only thing that they want from us is our free labor and free money from us. So I would strongly recommend that we do look in the area of international law and human rights. Let me see, Brother Paradox, you unmuted yourself yet? Okay, looks like he might still be having some problems. Did anybody else like to speak? Would anyone else like to speak?
Are you able to hear me, Scotty?
Yes. State your name, and if you could speak up just a little bit more.
Okay, this is Eloise Renee.
Thank you for joining us. Go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to bring out a few things. First, I wanted to mention that in New York, they have what's called the I-Team. There are some NYPD officers who are talking about the way that they have numbers that they have to keep up. They have quotas to enforce. And they're really ostracized and looked down upon and mistreated because they have come forth and they're talking about what's happening on the New York Police Department. Also, I want to say earlier there was a brother on the phone from Los Angeles who said that he left the department because of his conscience, because of he could no longer be a part of that. I understand that, and I think that it's not a part of it's not going to come from, you know, black folks joining the police department, because we don't have any power. We don't have any power there, and we don't have any power anywhere else except in our pocketbooks. So the first thing that I want to talk about is something that we brought up last week, and that is that when black people hurt the powers that be in the pocketbook, when we say that we are serious and we're not going to ride buses, we're not going to go to Walmart, we're not going to go to Target, we're not going to go to the mall, we're not going to do those things, okay? We should have certain grocery stores in certain towns where we say these are the stores that we will go to, and then all the others just don't go. We haven't come serious enough. We haven't been willing to lose. And one of the brothers just mentioned that about 30 minutes ago. He talked about, you know, we have to be willing to give up jobs. We have to be willing to give up things, because as long as we don't, then we are participating in what's keeping us down. The other thing is that I do believe in abolition of this, from this government. I believe that if we don't learn to isolate ourselves, when people have, you know, different, when you look at different types of diseases and things that are isolated, to be able to fix it, you stop, you handle this right here, even bleeding, you know, when you bleed, everything hits that spot to stop the bleeding, okay, and then you have other mechanisms that go in to help protect the area. Well, that's really what we need to do as a people. We need to have homeschooling for our children. We need to be pulling our kids out of these schools, because the schools are teaching the lies. As long as our children are taught the lies, then this is going to be perpetuated. When you look at the Willie Lynch letter and all the things that got us to where we are today, we have to look at history, and we have to talk about history when we talk about the solution. If we start talking about, well, you know, today, or yesterday, that's not good enough. This has been going on for 400 years in this country, since the 1600s. We have to go back there and work our way forward. And one of the ways that we have to do this is to start dealing with our children. We have to stop being a part of the system. If we start and we start boycotting this and boycotting that, but we still send our kids to the schools where the lies are perpetuated, then it's not going to catch on fire. It's not going to catch. It's going to keep. It's just going to keep on and keep on. We have never been integrated into this society. We're not going to be integrated into this society. And as long as we keep having all of these conversations that sound alike, that sound like what Martin Luther King talked about, just like the brother said earlier, civil rights is what got us into this in the first place. We're in a mess. And we're in a mess because the only time we've ever had anything in this country is when we isolated ourselves and had our own. When they burned all of our stuff down, burned our houses down, and killed our people, they said, okay, now come to us and shop. We thought that we died and went to heaven. Oh, good, now we can shop at Macy's. Now we can shop at Saks. We can go to all these places and give them our money and have none in our community. So when we decide that we're serious and we say we're not going to send our kids to these schools, and we're not going to go to these stores, and we're going to have to lose our jobs and lose our status and lose all kinds of things, until we do that, we're going to stay where we are. The other thing, the last thing I want to bring about is that when we're talking about policing our own communities, I like what the sister said, I don't like that word, but when we talk about being responsible for our own communities, we did that in Pasadena and Altadena, California, for a number of years back in the 60s and the 70s. We said, you know, when families got in trouble, when black men, you know, black families were having problems, we called on each other. We were there for one another. That lasted until that generation of brothers who were helping in the community, when they died off, that died off. And then, of course, people moved off and whatever happened. But when you talk about the police in our communities, police in our communities, all those things are, they're all partially quick fixes. But we drive outside of our communities. That young sister that got thrown down to the ground and beat up by that cop in Austin, all in that parking lot, all those people that were just, you know, minding their own business and nobody even standing there to see what was going on, those were all white folks. So she obviously, that wasn't a black community. So we don't just stay in our community. So even still, when you talk about, you know, the police in the different communities, that can be a portion, a beginning. But I think the real solution here is that we have to understand right now we need to just back out of the system and come up with our own system until we're healed. The sister said earlier, healed. Until we deal with the black psychosis, the post-traumatic, and when I say that, when we have the PTSD, we're not post anything. We're not beyond slavery. We're not beyond Jim Crow. We're not beyond that stuff. So it's still going on. When we stop the slavery, we have to stop it. When we stop the Jim Crow, we have to stop it. We have to say we are no longer going to participate and be victims to your system. The only way we can do that is to empower ourselves and have our own communities until we have the psychiatrist, the psychologist, and all that we need, the food, everything that we need in our community to heal and to build ourselves, and then maybe we can go out and be a part of somebody else's community. But until then, we can't.
Right.
And I just want to add something real quick. I just want to add something to that. In 1948, there was a blueprint that will help us to be able to energize ourselves to be free of the system upon which we're in. And that is, we can also follow that blueprint and ask for a partitioning of the land that we're in order for us to be able to be free on the basis of genocide, human rights, and indigenous rights. And we can, and again, there's a lot of different moving parts to this. And that one situation that we're engaged in is going to be the absolute right situation. But with it all working together, when it comes down to the middle, we'll all be victorious together. And so I'm willing and also willing to be a participant of, as we have began to start a petition to do just that on that case. So in that way, we will be able to petition the United States. And I think Rema Fijian number 4 might be one of the perfect ways to start to be able to, that conversation, for us to be able to develop a society that we're able to truly protect ourselves outside of the system that is persecuting us and has been doing so since the 1400s.
All right.
And,
thank you.
With you. Just like the sister said earlier, when we don't agree amongst ourselves, well, guess what? What we need to do is that those of us that do agree, we need to back exactly what you're saying. We need to back those kinds of things. And those that don't agree, they, you know, we're just going to have to let people fall by the wayside. Harriet Tubman said, "I freed 1,000 slaves." She said, "I would have freed 1,000 more if they had only known they were slaves."
Yeah, so I would agree.
If people continue to be slaves and stay in the system, let them stay there.
I agree.
Do whatever's going to happen, but we don't have to concern ourselves. We should not be concerned about the you know, the ones who want to stay in the system and stay a part of that. Do stay over there, but then don't come to the party saying, "Hey, I need some help over here." Because guess what? We don't circulate over there anymore. This is where we are. And if you want to remove yourself from that and be a part of this, fine. But we're not going to go over there and go to those courts and that system and those police departments and try to fight them anymore. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I want to thank everyone for turning out today. We've had a large listening audience tune in. Please visit blacktalkradionetwork.com. Each person you heard speaking today has a radio program on our network, and these are the type of serious conversations that are had by everyone on our network. We do not engage in foolishness. If you're looking to be entertained, if you're looking to laugh, if you're looking, you know, for that kind of stuff, has its place, but it just has no place on our network. Okay, so I would implore everyone listening to check out the individual programs. They have archive podcasts and support the network, support the network in general, and support these individual hosts and their programs specifically. So again, I want to thank everyone who tuned in today and for everyone who participated in sharing. This won't be the last town hall that we have. The next one will be better because I will know how to organize it a little bit better. So we will have these maybe once a month. We should have them, if not more. But again, I want to thank everyone for their participation. I do want to transition now to Time for Awakening Radio, which is already on air, which we carry on Black Talk Radio Network. But thank you all once again, and peace and blessings to all.
All callers are muted.